We are speaking on Thursday, April 6th, on a shortened week due to markets being closed for Good Friday. The non-farm payroll report is coming out on Friday, and lots of eyes will be looking at that to gauge the health of the jobs market, especially in light of recent economic data that's come in weaker than expected. And there's been more and more talk about an oncoming recession and a hard landing, particularly in the second half. But the jobs market has so far held up pretty strong. We're going to dive into that a little bit more and talk about some reasons why it may actually be quite a bit weaker than what has been shown. And to do that with us today for our Smart Macro segment is our Chief Investment Officer here, Chris Poplava. So Chris, tell us about what your expectations are for this non-farm payroll report and some of the trends that you're looking at when it comes to the jobs market.
I believe, Chris, the consensus is calling somewhere around 250,000, give or take. But, you know, honestly, at this point in the cycle, I really don't pay attention too much to non-farm payrolls. And the reason for that is they're heavily revised around turning points in the economy. And so if I'm correct in my assumption that the labor market is in the process of eroding and that later this year we're going to have unemployment begin to rise, then I think these data points that we're going to get, such as the non-farm payrolls from Friday, will really be irrelevant and heavily revised down. A good case in point was this week on Thursday, we got the revisions for continuing and initial jobless claims, which dramatically changed the picture of what those looked like in 2022. So that to me is a huge warning sign, and it tends to validate that the non-farm payrolls that we're getting from the government are likely going to be revised lower because it really doesn't match up with what we're seeing in other areas. For example, we also got the Challenger job layoff announcements, and those are up 410% compared to March of 22. So again, I'm going to repeat that. Massive layoffs are up 410% versus a year ago. And yet we're still magically adding 250,000 jobs every month. That doesn't make sense. And when I look at other employment data, for example, the paychecks data, that's showing an annual rate of decline in outright job payrolls, that we're losing jobs over the last 12 months rather than adding. And even when we look at other employment measures like ADP, which we got on Wednesday, they're showing that small businesses are shedding payrolls compared to a year ago. And small businesses tend to have less levers they can pull versus large companies in terms of protecting profit margins or responding to a downturn. And that's why they tend to lay off workers earlier than larger companies before larger companies kind of throw in the towel with their efforts and finally cut costs by cutting payrolls. So I think it really does paint a different picture, Chris, than what the market is showing with the rally that we've had, which it's been incredibly narrow. I did some work earlier this week, and I was looking at the attribution of the S&P's return for the year based on its members. And what I found was that the top three members, I believe, explained something around 63%. And when I expanded that to the top 10 members of the 500 stocks, the S&P, then that explained 90% of the stock market's return in just 10 stocks. So we do not have a robust rally this year, despite what you might see in the headline indices or even the tech-heavy NASDAQ. In fact, what we're seeing, Chris, is really a very selective market that's being led by large-cap tech. And this was something, if you recall, 2 years ago, more than that, where I was warning in the latter part of 21 that the market was getting more selective and that I was concerned about the outlook for stocks in 2022. The market, whenever it is led by a handful of stocks, is vulnerable to downward movements. And that's what I think we're going to see ahead.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing because the economy is so extremely complex and the government relies very heavily on these statistical models in order to generate a lot of these reports and the data, whether or not it is non-farm payrolls or various other economic measures. And like you pointed out, very often they do not capture what's happening at major turning points. So it sounds like from what you're saying, we're in that process of the economic data coming in much weaker than anticipated, and the jobless claims numbers, the non-farm payroll reports as well, they've been giving this illusion of strength, perhaps because of this modeling error, while at the same time we're seeing under the hood ongoing deterioration, which is in alignment with the leading economic indicators, as we've been discussing, you know, 11th consecutive decline, in alignment with the fact that the yield curve is deeply inverted and that we see a lot of tightening, not just by the Fed, of course, but by the entire banking sector, which is pulling back on lending. So a lot of these things are all sort of lining up now for weakness in the second half, it sounds like.
It does. And, you know, another point too, Chris, that I did some work on is this week earlier, we got the ISM manufacturing report and we got the ISM service report. And both of those came in weaker than expected. And manufacturing continues to contract. And one of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to look at when a recession begins, what was the average level of the ISM at the time the recession started? And what I found, Chris, going back to, I believe, as far back as the 50s, was that on average, the ISM is at about 46.3 by the time the recession starts. And what did we hit for April for the ISM? We got it 46.3. So essentially, the current reading for the ISM is at a level that we typically see at the start of a recession. The reason why this is important is historically, whenever the Fed does pivot and is done raising interest rates, we tend to get a stock market rally, and mainly because of the hope of optimism that we're going to be able to avert a recession because the Fed is done raising interest rates. And what we see is that length of that rally and the basically its duration and magnitude is really determined by how soon the recession begins when the Fed is done raising interest rates. So a good example is, Chris, is in 2006, Ben Bernanke, the last rate hike he did was in the summer of 2006, and yet the recession didn't begin until December of 2007. So the market basically had a year and a half between when the Fed was done raising rates and when the recession began, and it rallied over 20%. Now, other examples we've seen where a recession began within a month after the Fed stopped raising interest rates, the market basically rolls over. And another important thing too is when we look at the stock market and jobless claims, we basically see that they are inverse to each other. So if jobless claims are moving up as they are, then we should be expecting the stock market to fall. So the main point I'm driving at is that we may not see, Chris, a significant rally when the Fed is finally done raising interest rates. In fact, the rally off the October lows, or even really the rally for the year-to-date period, could already have discounted the Fed pivot. So I think essentially the upside is quite limited at the current time and the downside vulnerability for this market.
Yeah, and that's been the message that you've been saying now, as we've seen this rally, is basically sell into strength and keep in mind that the fundamental backdrop is deteriorating. As Jim Welsh said in the first part of our show today, you know, talking about that, if you look at three different things that have happened prior to every recession, those are all now in place. And those have been the things that you've been pointing to and addressing in the weekly investment videos with the charts that you've been showing as well to all of our listeners and audience. Chris, one thing that has been discussed is this idea of sell in May and go away. Do you think that that's going to end up playing out this time?
You know, I do, Chris. Seasonals are a huge factor. The sell in May and go away to Labor Day, you know, we see that over and over again. That does tend to play out. What is more powerful, though, or at least what kind of all influences the amplitude of that, is our LEIs. So for example, the sell in May and go away to Labor Day, I mean, that was a horrible strategy in 2020. Why? The Fed was printing trillions of dollars and lean economic indicators were sharply moving higher. So the concern I have, Chris, is when the normal seasonal weakness of sell in May and go away to Labor Day, if you have that in conjunction with falling LEIs, that means that normal seasonal period might actually be even weaker than we typically see. So I definitely think, again, as I've said, the downside vulnerability for this market is significantly more than the upside potential, in my opinion.
Well, as always, we've been speaking with our Chief Investment Officer here at Financial Sense Wealth Management. If you aren't already, I'd highly recommend that you catch the weekly investment videos that he produces on YouTube and on our website, going through a lot of the charts and data, in addition to what we are doing here at Financial Sense Wealth Management with clients. If you'd like to get in touch with us to speak with us about our investment outlook or how we can assist you, you can give us a call at 888-486-3939, or you can go to our website and click where it says Contact Us. Chris, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on our show, and we look forward to speaking with you in another 2 weeks.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I hope everyone has a wonderful Easter weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.